This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the September 15th edition of Invest Talk. It's all about enabling the average investor to become better than average. That's what we try to do every day on this show. As always, your questions are first. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday, and you can ask a question anytime you want, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we'll answer it on the next show. The number, 888-99-CHART. Do you need to go through a broker to buy a mutual fund? What's the difference between a mutual fund and a brokerage account? A mutual fund account and a brokerage account. The ins and outs of starting up. That's our main talking point today. And when I say starting up, I mean starting up and investing. Now, before we go any further, let's check our 24-hour listener line calls. It's open for your questions anytime you want to make them.
Hey, Steve. My name is Vijay. I have a quick question on ETFs or the index funds. So if I want to position some portion of my portfolio in the index funds, which one should I start with? Some long, dividend-paying, long-term avenue? And also, I would like to know, is there an entry point kind of a thing like we do for stocks for ETFs? Just wanted to hear your thoughts on that. Thank you.
Okay, well, an ETF is like, you know, is they track indexes or they track sectors of the market or some other specific equity line like currencies or gold or whatever, commodities. So if you're just starting out and you want a broad-based index of the marketplace, then probably the most common is the S&P 500, and that would be the SPY. I know there's others. But there's also ETFs that just focus on big stocks that play dividends. I got a list of those that I send out to people, whoever wants to see them, whenever they ask me for it, and I send it out. So if you're looking for dividend payer ETFs, I have a short list of those. But the most common is the S&P 500. That represents about 80% of the market cap of the entire market. And that would be the best one to start with. I mean, you can buy the index for the Dow Jones Industrials, but that's only 30 stocks instead of 500. And those 30 stocks represent about 20% of the market because they're some of the largest companies. So I would do with the S&P 500. That's what I would start with. It's pretty simple. More likely than not, your retirement portfolio is populated with mutual funds. So as the years go on, you're faced with selecting them and then reevaluating them. So how do you pick them? Find strategies. You know, the strategies in all those different funds can range violently in different directions. You know, these days you can buy anything for almost any type of assets and even shorting through mutual funds and ETFs. So it gets pretty complex. It can get complex. So you need to understand the strategy. The strategy of the fund that you're buying. You need to understand what they're doing, why, and does that fit in with what you want? Okay, if the strategy is consistent, definable, and in line with your expectations, then you've done your homework. But you still probably not ready to buy even after you've done that. You still have to examine the manager. You know, buying mutual funds, anybody could go out and buy one. You don't have to do anything. But you won't have a clue what you've done, what you own, and why doesn't it work or why does it work so well. You don't have a clue. The best way to evaluate a manager is to compare other managers doing the same thing that manager is doing. In other words, if he's a large growth company mutual fund, you need to compare him with other large growth mutual funds. And you need to compare him over a period of time, not just last year. And one of the big mistakes that most people make is they look at last year's mutual funds and buy the best performer. The best performing mutual fund last year. That's the worst thing you could do because they invariably don't do it 2 years in a row. Matter of fact, the second or third year after that, they usually do terrible. So you kind of consider the manager and its peer group, and you want to buy a manager, doesn't have to be the number one, but it's got to be in the upper echelon of his peer group and the funds that are similar to his. And Morningstar.com helps you with that, by the way. They really do. What can I do to help you today? Let's start with your questions. Back to the phone now on another question from our 24-hour listen line. The number is 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve, what's going on? I'm looking to invest with Charles Schwab. They have a good fund there called the Thomas Partners. They bought these guys out a few years ago to use their strategies. I was wondering if you could, you know, kind of look over the Thomas Partners portfolio and give me what you think about it. Also, I recently got to speak to an economics major, and he thinks that if Trump's corporate tax reform goes through, we might see the Dow floating in the 30,000 range. I'm just curious what your thoughts on that are. Thank you so much. Hope to hear it on the show. Bye.
If you give me the symbol, I can look up a fund and I can talk about it, but I can't just do research on a fund family and pick out the funds for you. I can't do that. Dow 30,000, yeah, it's coming. Now, I'm not saying it's going to come next year, the year after, the year after. It could be 5 years from now. But if we get a good tax cut, corporate tax cut and a middle class tax cut, if we get that, and it's not just 2%, I mean, if it's significant, it will spark a lot of growth and a lot more money coming into the market. Now, that doesn't mean you won't have short-term corrections. You will. You still will. But, Dow 30,000, Dow 40,000, yeah, they're coming. I can't tell you how long it might take. It might take 10 more years, but I'm pretty sure they're out there, and that number is out there. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. The ins and outs of starting up. That's one of our talking points today. Also, I want to discuss what do you look for, or what does the market show you? How do you know that when the market starts falling, that it's for real? How do you know that? And I've got a couple ideas. The biggest financial regrets the millennials have. This is a survey. Millennials, ages 20 to about 26 or so. And I want to talk about inflation and the stock market. What's the relationship? Low inflation, high inflation, and comparing that to what the stock market does. I have an interesting little chart here I want to share. Too bad can't share it to you online or over the radio, but I'll describe it as best I can. Those are what we're going to talk about, unless, of course, you call and ask what you want to talk about. The market today was up. We had a pretty good up week today. The Dow's up 64, the Nasdaq up 19, and the S&P up 4. Those three indexes were down initially because of the firing of the missile over Japan by North Korea. Notice that that's no longer having much of an impact. I mean, for 5 seconds, the market worried about it and then forgot about it. Because, you know, once market gets used to something and it happens over and over and over, it's like the boy crying wolf, you don't pay attention to it anymore. Except when the wolf does show up, but then all of a sudden it's Panic City, right? If North Korea does fire a missile and hits a city in Tokyo or any of our city in South Korea, all bets are off. And that's when the market will really react. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. What's open for discussion? We get a lot of questions about stock, but we also encourage questions about life insurance, funding for college, how to structure your portfolio, how many stocks, what percentage of bonds, all that kind of stuff. Any money topic is okay. 888-99-CHART, how you can get through to invest stock right now. Well, let's go talk to Wendy in Chino Hills. How are you doing, Wendy?
I'm doing good. How are you, Steve?
Good. Thank you for the call.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question regarding dividend today. Mm-hmm. So when I check on Morningstar, they have these dividend per share. There's a number. And then there's an actual payout, a cash dividend. Mm-hmm. What's the difference? I know I'm not being paid by the other dividend per share number. Mm-hmm. So,
Well, what they do, Wendy, is they announce a dividend, and they announce a dividend in cash. We're going to pay 32 cents a share, 18 cents a share, $1.50 a share. That's how they announce it, okay? But how it's reported, okay. How it's reported on all the websites and all the data that I buy is reported as a percentage of the stock price. So if the stock price was $10, and they say, we're going to pay $1 per share for everybody who owns the stock on the X dividend date, and they tell you what that date is. Well, that's $1. But that equates to 10% because the stock is trading at $10. But by the time the stock, let's say 20 days later, they pay the dividend, the stock doubles to $20 a share. Okay. Well, now it's a 5% dividend, but it's still $1. You see what I'm saying? So don't confuse the two. You're going to get paid a dividend in dollars per share. That's how you get paid a dividend.
Yeah, so, no, I'm not talking about the percentage, I think.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Okay so, let's, can I give you a specific stock?
Sure.
So you can take a look?
Sure.
So it's ROIC.
I'm sorry, say that again.
ROIC.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
So being paid... they paid, I think, 18 cents, something around 19 cents.
Okay.
For the dividend.
Okay.
And then the dividend per share, there's a number, they said current is 0.75.
Uh-huh.
So I was asking about 75. What's that 75?
And, well, they could, the 18 cents, you said they're paying 18 cents. That could be, that's usually a dividend reported on a quarterly basis. They usually pay quarterly very often. Sometimes they pay monthly, and they could they could report it quarterly or monthly and then tell you what the annual dividend is.
So that's the annual. Okay.
It might be. It depends. Okay. Thanks, Wendy. I appreciate the call. Let's go to BJ in Fremont. How you doing, BJ?
I'm doing good, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for the call.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about Constellation brand, symbol SPV. Looks like its PE is pretty high, but the stock is pretty consistent and very stable. Mm-hmm. What's your view on that?
Okay.
I mean, especially if market turns south a little bit, how much impact it will have on this stock?
Well, this is a stock that, it's Constellation Brands, everybody. It's a $39 billion company. It produces distillates, branded wines and spirits in U.S., Canada, New Zealand, and Italy. So, and it's been growing fairly steady, between 3 and 10% sales every quarter. Earnings are going to go up 21% this year, then another 10% next year. So it's a $203 stock, and it's going to pay $8. It's going to earn $8.98 next year, unlike $9. So that tells you the PE is fairly high. The range is 12 to 31, and right now it's at about 27 or so. Return on equity is very good, 21%. If the market falls, this will fall with it. But usually these kinds of stocks are pretty hold up fairly well. They're not as cyclical as other stocks. So it usually holds pretty well in a down market. But right now it's expensive, so don't chase it. I wouldn't chase it very well. Thanks for the call. This is Invest Talk, everybody. We're live 4:05 Pacific time.
I have an IRA, it's not a Roth, the regular IRA. I've had it in a mutual fund, dollar cost averaging for the last 15 years, made quite a bit of money on it, but now I'm doing some real estate investing. I want to know if I take the money out, do a self-directed IRA, number one, can I do that? And secondly, how long do I have to reinvest it before I have to pay a penalty on it?
60 days is if you take the money out of an IRA before you retired retirement age, and you got, I think it's 60 days that you have to put it back. To avoid the tax and penalty. There is a way to buy real estate from an IRA. You have to set up a special situation. There's certain companies that do it. And I'm not that familiar with it since I have never done it, but I know I've had clients who have done it. So there is a way to do that. But I can't advise you on it because I don't know enough about that. But if you're just going to take money out of the IRA, you have 60 days to put it back without tax or penalty. And how old are you? Are you old enough to withdraw it? But if you do withdraw it and you are old enough, you can avoid the penalty, but you won't avoid the taxes. So be very, very careful. Very careful. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what's the difference between a brokerage account and an account at a mutual fund? Well, an account at a mutual fund generally means that you can only buy that mutual fund's products, their funds, their ETFs, okay? A brokerage account gives you unlimited, they open up a brokerage account, you can get unlimited places you can go buy whatever you want, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, whatever you feel like. That's the difference. A brokerage account is not tied to the products of the brokerage account. A brokerage account, think of it like a savings account, a checking account, except this is a brokerage account. And in this account, you are able to buy stocks and bonds and mutual funds and ETFs. It's that simple. Some of the things, decisions you have to make when you open up a brokerage account. Do you want to go to a discount broker or a full service broker? Full service brokers charge a lot more for trades, and they usually are the ones who pick the stocks and mutual funds and ETFs, and they talk with you, and you agree to buy the things together. And that's a full service broker. Discount broker, you're on your own. You buy and sell what you want. And there's different kinds of brokerage accounts. Of course, there's the IRA and the individual account and the trust account and all those kinds. But there's also two other basic kinds. From all those accounts, one is either you can have a cash account, which is called a cash account, or a margin account, a cash account or a margin account. And you can have any IRA, individual, joint, any of those kinds of accounts can be either a cash or a margin. Now, what's the difference? Well, on a cash account, you can never go, you can never short any stocks. Maybe you're never going to anyways. You can never borrow money on the account. Maybe you weren't going to do that anyways. And a margin account, you can go short and you can go on margin, borrow money. But also, one thing that a lot of people don't know, when you have a margin account, you are given permission for the broker, whoever you have that account with, to lend out the stocks so other people can short your stocks, even though you don't even know that's happening behind the scenes. You never, stock never leaves your portfolio on your state, but it actually already could be lent out. The brokerage firm is just guaranteed that it will be there if you ever want to sell it. See, there's all those kinds of things to decide. You know, so my preference is for everybody to go to a discount broker, have the lowest trading fees, and you know, if you don't know what to do, buy a mutual fund, an index fund, or an ETF that's an index fund, and just leave it alone, like the previous caller did. Leave it alone for a number of years, and you'll be just fine. Leave it alone long enough, you'll be fine. At a certain age, and you have to want to start considering the risk that you're taking and whether you should be fully invested or not, or have a better diversified portfolio that's a little more defensive. Those are all decisions you have to make. Here's an investment term you should know. What is a treasury bond? T-bond. What is a treasury bond? T-bond. A treasury bond, some people call them T-bonds, is a marketable fixed interest U.S. government debt security with a maturity of more than 10 years. That's what a treasury bond is. Treasury bonds make interest payments semi-annually, and the income received is only taxed at the federal level. Treasury bonds are known in the market as primarily risk-free. They are issued by the U.S. government with very little risk of default. Very little. Of course, you can go to Investopedia.com, get a better definition if you like. Or this is a definition, Investopedia. Get a more complete definition. How many stocks is too many for your retirement portfolio? How many is too few? Let's talk about that. You can reach me right now as we move into part two of today's Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next. First, good reason number five for a portfolio checkup with Steve. Steve says that many portfolios he looks at are weighted in just one or two sectors. A diverse mix of market sectors is so important to the health of a retirement portfolio. Steve can help you reorganize your retirement portfolio. He can make suggestions about the sectors of the future. And if you'd like, a KPP financial program that fits your goals and your life situation. There's never a cost for InvestTalk listeners and no sales pitch or obligation of any kind ever. To schedule your one-on-one conversation with Steve, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review, or you can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. And now let's continue with the podcast. Now back to InvestTalk. Steve is here to share some ideas, bring you up to date on market trends, and answer your questions. Our direct line, 888-99-CHART.
Well, this is Josh calling from Seattle. Enjoy the show as always. I had a quick question about Applied Materials, ticker AMAT. Looks like a really great company. Just get your thoughts on that one. Holding time for the next 20 years or so. Thanks a lot again. Bye.
First of all, I would not set a date for holding time for high-tech companies. There's too many of them go out of business. Too many big ones go out of business over the years and have over the past years. But Applied Materials is a very good company, AMAT. It's a $50 billion company, so you would think that it had staying power. Manufactures deposition, inspection, and etching and cleaning equipment used in flat panel display fabrication. The earnings are going to be $3.20 this year after being $1.75 last year and then $3.59 next year. So that's one of the reasons why it's gone up so nicely from $14, $15 now to $47. It is at a triple top right now. You want it to break through. If they break through the triple top, that's usually pretty bullish. And the price is not out of line with the P.E. ratio. The five-year P.E. ratio is 12 to 40, and making 359 next year, you would think that that is a pretty darn reasonable price, you know, P.E. ratio-wise at 16. Return on equity is 26%, and it's growing very fast. Sales are growing. Now, I want you to know, a couple of years ago, sales weren't growing at all, and now in the last year, they've really picked up dramatically, 30, 40%. Per quarter. So that's why you're having this great run. If it breaks up above 40, let's call it 48, breaks up above 48, then I would say then, yeah, this is a buy. Right now, it's right at that top, and it needs to break through before you pull that trigger. That's what I think, anyways. AMAT was a symbol. Thanks for the call. Appreciate that. Okay, stocks are pricey amid low inflation. There's been a lot. This was, in the Wall Street Journal, is where I got this information. What happens in low and high inflation with stock returns? And the chart that they have had inflation, they had deflation as one bar, then 0 to 1%, that's a second bar, 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4%, 4 to 5%, 5 to 6%, and 6% and higher. And went back over the years to see what were the P.E. ratios at those times, and what was the average return the following 12 months for the S&P 500? Okay, so they're taking inflation. They're looking at it. Okay, at low inflation, what are the P.E. range, and what were the returns 12 months after? And then as inflation goes up, those years that it's at higher and higher and higher, what were the returns when what happened to the PEs. It's very interesting. Very clear demarcation, which was very surprising, at 4%. When we hit 4% inflation, the PE rate averaged about 16.6%. And then the following return the following year is 1.8. Then when it goes to 5%, the following year return shrunk by 1.2. But the fascinating number, as soon as it goes above 6% or higher, the PE ratio is at its lowest, about 11, and the return following year starts to go up again. Then the higher the inflation at that point, after it reaches that, the better returns of the following year. So at low inflation, the returns are pretty good. From 0 to 1%, P ratio is 17. The following returns for the S&P 500 for the year, 6.8. So all the way up, the returns on are 6 to 9%. And the P ratio, it ranges from about 17 to 21 or so. But it's when inflation gets 4 to 5%, the market goes down. But as soon as inflation goes 6% or higher, the following year, the market goes up. Now, can you think of why? It's this. Most investors believe that as soon as inflation gets that high, that it's now at a peak and going to turn around, and the market will go up because the inflation then will fall. The psychology, that would be the contrarian psychology coming in at that point. But this is just a study of the facts. I thought that was pretty interesting myself. Anyways, right? The reason why we talked about it, inflation numbers came out for August today, and we have an annual inflation rate of about 1.9%. It was a little higher than expected at 0.4%, out this morning. So I thought that was some interesting facts. 0.4 for August. And so this article was printed out and just sparked my interest. Time for InvestTalk 101, my lesson on everyday investing. There are certain tax advantages to owning municipal bonds, but there are risks too. What's one way to minimize the downside? The answer is to stay diversified, of course, and keep the cost down. Municipal ETFs offer investors instant diversifications. And as this fund, which is professionally managed, holds a broad array of municipal bonds. Management fees and expenses are very low, usually, compared to purchasing the same amount of bonds from your broker or in your own account. So buying bonds, there's a cost associated with it. You as an individual can't really negotiate that cost down. But a registered investment advisor or a brokerage firm like myself, we can. We do. One of my custodians, there's no cost to buy the bonds. None. So, that means I can buy bonds all day long and buy little bits of them all over the place for my clients. I like it. I like it a lot. So bonds also have, best municipal bonds have very high degree of liquidity. You can also buy what is called insured municipal bonds, insurance companies insuring the bonds itself. That means you'll get less return, but you'll have a much higher guarantee of your money back. Of course, municipal bonds are pretty safe than by themselves. Not as safe as, U.S. Treasury T-bonds, but pretty safe. But not absolutely safe. There's been a number of municipalities that have gone bankrupt. But if you ever studied any of those municipalities in the United States, they eventually pay their bondholders. New York City went bankrupt once, eventually paid all their bondholders off. They just stretched out the payments for a lot more years. Orange County, California, one of the richest counties in the United States, they filed bankruptcy on their bonds. Not that many years ago, 10, 20 years ago. I don't remember exactly. And they did pay everybody off, and they did it very rapidly, but they still went bankrupt because of stupid of, we had a very uneducated treasury at that time. It's not a very smart man. Anyways, those are bonds. That's InvestTalk 101. If you want to talk more about municipal bonds, just give me a call, 888-99-CHART.
How would you like to invest in the same program as your financial advisor? Well, you can when you choose any one of the investment programs at KPP Financial. The principals at KPP invest their own money right along with their clients. It's called parallel investing. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is Chris from Ontario, California. I'd like to say I appreciate your show. Thanks for all your help. But I'm calling about a server of which I could buy stock from. I'm a fairly new investor. I don't have very much money. I have less than $1,000 in an account. But I usually use Robinhood to buy my stocks through an app. But they don't have Tencent. I've been hearing a lot about Tencent lately, and they don't support it. So I'm trying to find somewhere I can buy stock cheap without really having to pay anything to purchase a stock. Robinhood doesn't charge you anything to make a purchase every day, so I kind of want something similar to that. So if you could answer my question, I'd really appreciate it. Thanks for your guys' help, as always. Have a good day.
Well, there's very few brokerage firms, discount brokerage firms, that will charge you nothing. Many firms will give you free trades for a certain amount of time. So Robinhood is a good place that you can, if you're very small, that you can buy stocks for free. There's limitations to it, but you know, I'm not well enough versed to answer those kinds of questions. So, but you're going to have a hard time finding anything better than Robinhood if you're talking purely based on expenses. Okay, so I just would stay with that and do the best you can with them. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Okay, so when the market does fall, how do you know it's for real? How do you know this is a real fall? Because many times the market will go down 1, 2, or 3 days, and then you'll see buyers come in, push it right back up. That's what we've been experiencing. We have very widespread bullishness now. Okay, we do. And there's not the wall of worry is crumbling. Usually the market crawling up a wall of worry is a good thing. But I've noticed people are starting not even to worry or care about the market. They just assume it's going to go back up and keep going up all the time. And it won't, but they assume that. So when the market, right now we have very high bullishness, very high. So when the market goes down a day or two or one or two or three days and no one cares at all and just push it back up, and when the market goes down even for a day or two or three and the market participants become more bullish, that probably will mark the top. Okay, right now, about 80% of the market timers out there are very, very bullish, and they want you to put more than 80% exposure in the market. Whenever that happens in the past, that's kind of a high. Doesn't mean it's going to roll over and go down, but if they maintain that position even when the market goes down for 2 or 3 days, then you probably know that you've reached the limit of the high of the market. Because in the past, when the market goes down 2 or 3 days, these market timers have been getting very conservative. Now think about me and what I've been saying on the radio. I think you should have some cash on the sideline. I've been very consistent about that. I have been saying for some time that the market's overvalued. Stay with the market, but don't worry about taking profits and have some cash, and don't worry about having some hedges in there to go the other way. And I'm still saying that. But I also said stay in the market. Just don't, make sure you rebalance, make sure you take some profits. But if I caved in, the moment I cave in and say, put everything in, forget about it, the market's just going to keep going up, don't worry about it, that's when the market will probably top. It's when everybody capitulates into the market. It's true on both sides, on an upside and a downside. When everybody capitulates into the market, say, okay, it's just going up, forget it, let's just go, let's just pull all our money in there, that's when it's at the top and it's not going to stay there. The other end is when everybody's out, they capitulate. The market's down. It's been down for a long time, and everybody just forget it. Just get out. That kind of capitulation marks the bottom of the market. The trick is how do you identify those tops and bottoms? How do you know? And that is the difficult part. No one knows. No one knows. Let's go to Gene in North Carolina. How you doing, Gene?
Hey, thanks, Steve, for taking my call.
Thank you.
You were just talking about muni bonds. I'm curious if I was to categorize muni bonds as general obligation versus revenue bonds.
Okay.
What?
Those
what
are
if,
two different kinds of municipal bonds. Two different kinds.
So, revenue bonds. If you had a revenue bond in Florida for toll roads or something that were washed out, is that of concern then in terms of the revenues?
Yes, because that's more narrow as to where that income is coming from to pay that bond. So for everybody else, let's clarify, Gene. He's talking about a revenue bond. These both are municipal bonds. One's called a revenue bond. One's called a general obligation bond. The revenue bond is tied to something like your sewer fees or toll road or something is tied. The revenue is derived from that, and that's what pays for the bond. Okay? So that money has to come from that source, and if it doesn't come from that source, the bond can default. A general obligation bond means the city entirety is responsible for paying that bond. No matter what, the whole city, all their tax base, everything is required to be used to pay that bond back.
So the revenue source is more diversified.
Yes, exactly. They have the ability to tax people higher to pay those bonds. Whereas if you have a revenue bond, they can increase the fees on the toll road. They increase the fees because that's only the source of the income that is derived to pay the bond.
Right. So if the toll road is washed out or if the stadium is underwater or airport's not working or something, then that particular revenue source may dry up.
That's right. And your bonds may default because of it.
Yeah.
Now, you can also get revenue bonds that have insurance on it. Gene, they can insure those revenue bonds. That's common, and that makes it more safe.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks. Great question, though. Thank you, Gene. Appreciate the question. Love those kind of questions. You're listening to Invest Talk. Glad you're with us today. We're headed into our last segment. Why not get your question to me right now at 888-99-CHART?
My name is John, calling from Jacksonville, Florida. I'm a podcast listener, and I have a question about a stock, Bristol Myers, ticker symbol is BMY. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Well, I kind of like BMY, Bristol Myers Squibb. It develops branded pharmaceuticals. It's a $102 billion company, growing its sales between 6 and 15% per quarter. Earnings are going to be $2.96 this year, then another $3.17 next year, and it's $62 stock. So that means it's a 20 PE, and the five-year average is 15 to 35. Return on equity is 31%, pays a 2.5% dividend. On and on and on, it's a good, solid company. It had made a new 52-week high here in about a week or two ago, and then moved sideways. We call that consolidation. And chances are good that it'll keep going up. So I kind of like it. You know, if the market falls, it'll fall with it. But, you know, drug companies are anti-cyclical, and that means they don't go up and down with the economic cycle. And last month, they announced positive results from a phase 3 trial on a new a renal cell cancer drug that they have. So, kind of like it, BMY. 888-99-CHART. Let's go to Nick in Hayward. How you doing, Nick?
Yes, sir. How are you, sir?
I'm good.
Nice. Good show.
Thank you.
Steve, I'm thinking of a long-term buy for this Lloyd Banking Group, LYG.
Okay.
It's a low-price stock, but I'm thinking they're not going to go out of business.
No, it's too big. It's a $63 billion company. Lloyd's Bank out of England, United Kingdom. So.
Right.
Yeah,
and they have a dividend, 3%.
Yeah. So the question you have in your mind is they're going to make 35 cents next year after making 39 cents this year. So it's a $3.54 stock. So it's a 10 PE based on that. But if it's going to make 35 cents and it's 4% dividend, 4% of $3.50 is what? 12 plus about 14, 15 cents out of, and they're going to make 35 cents. So yeah, they can afford that dividend and they could probably continue to pay it. It does have erratic sales. That's why it's so cheap. The sales are up, they're down on a quarter-to-quarter basis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're just not very consistent, and that's why it's cheap like this. And the return on equity is only 5%, which is pretty darn low. And remember, it's in the United Kingdom, and, of course, it's all about the Brexit. They're leaving the EU. And so the question was, how bad will it hurt the Bank of England? You know, all their banking companies. But it is a low-priced stock compared to the future earnings. It is. You could take your shot here. I don't have really... I think that it bounced off the 200-day moving average a few days ago and went right up. So I think this might be a good place to buy it.
Okay. Sounds good, Steve. Thanks
for the call. Might have to wait a while because, you know, they're still working out how to get out of the EU. And that's going to take several more years, I think. Really. Okay, last talking point before we call it a day, everybody. The biggest financial regrets for millennials. These are age group 20 to 26. Financial regrets. This is a survey done of 1,000 people, so it's very narrow. It's not that big. Half of millennials regretted spending money on coffee shops and restaurants. 62% regret fast food spending. I thought that was interesting. They spend an average of $2,300 more per year than other generations, like the baby boomers and the Generation Xers. They spend $2,300 more per year on items such as groceries, gas, restaurants, and coffee, and cell phones. See? I thought it was interesting. The millennials are falling victim to the most common financial vices, spending money on coffee shops. That was one of the conclusions of their survey. They go to fast food takeout restaurants 5 times a week. 5 times a week. 30% higher than previous generationers. Interesting, huh? Time's up for the hour. We often get asked to recommend books, good books, to help you bolster your investing knowledge. That's why we built our recommended books department on InvestTalk.com. This is a personally chosen collection of my favorite books, everybody. It's right there on InvestTalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and the whole family at KPP, thanks for being with me today. And join us again on InvestTalk on Monday.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.